Pastor Mike, I have the privilege to bring to you this morning's word. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever had the thought, God, what are you doing? I don't understand why you are doing this, God. Why are you letting this happen, God? Anybody ever had that thought? Yeah, I thought so. You know, we all have these plans and these expectations on how things in life and circumstances are going to go, and we're confident that things are going to work out the way that they thought they would. And when it doesn't, when plans fail, it hurts. And so we ask God, what are you doing? And I'm sure I've talked about this before, but when I think of a time in my life where I was totally and completely stumped by God and confused and frustrated by God's timing and planning, it would have to be during our adoption when a 2-year process turned into a 5-year process. We started the beginning of our adoption process in 2012. It was a year after our son Gabe was born, and we thought and we dreamt of having a little playmate for Gabe. And they would grow up together, and it was just a beautiful dream that we had. So we chose our adoption field, which was the country of Ghana, and after a year of waiting, which is standard, we got news that adoptions were being suspended. And we were close to the top of the list, so we decided to stick it out. And to be honest, a lot of our finances were wrapped up in this program as well. So we waited. Then a year went by. And then another year went by, and we got word that adoptions in Ghana were officially shut down. Want to know what I was thinking? God, what are you doing? I don't understand what you're doing. Frustrated and heartbroken and angry, we decided that we were going to change adoption fields. We decided to go to the country of Ethiopia. And we waited a year. We finally got matched to a child. We were planning our trip to bring him home. And then we got word that adoptions in Ethiopia were going in the process of being suspended, just like they were in Ghana. God, why are you letting this happen? Why? And to God's grace, we were able to go. We were able to meet Kobe. We were able to pass court. We were able to bring him home. And we were told that we were some of the last people to adopt through our organization in Ethiopia. And I praise God for the results. I do. But I assure you, his timing was not my timing. And his plans were not my plans. In John chapter 11, Mary and Martha, they had plans. They actually had a great plan. But it didn't turn out the way that they thought it would. And praise God, because as Mary and Martha learned, and I pray that we all learn, that God's plans are usually bigger and better than our own. And we need to trust in him. Even if our plans have failed, and even if we're frustrated, and even if we don't see it. I'm going to invite you to turn in your Bibles to John chapter 11. John chapter 11, it's also going to be on your screen. But we're going to start reading here. John chapter 11, starting in verse 1. It says, a man named Lazarus was sick, and he lived in Bethany with his sisters, Mary and Martha. This is the Mary who later poured the expensive perfume on the Lord's feet and wiped them with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was sick, so the two sisters sent a message to Jesus telling him, Lord, your dear friend is very sick. But when Jesus heard about it, he said, Lazarus' sickness will not end in death. No, it happened for the glory of God, so that the Son of God will receive glory from this. So although Jesus loved Martha and Mary and Lazarus, He stayed where he was at for the next 2 days. Finally, he said to his disciples, "Let's go back to Judea." So Mary and Martha, they knew Jesus well. So well that they sent Jesus a note. And they knew that this note, Jesus would receive this note. And they also knew that Jesus would want to know what this note said. And they had a plan. They were going to tell Jesus about their situation so that Jesus would do something about it. If we tell Jesus that Lazarus is sick, then Jesus will heal Lazarus. This is a great plan, right? This is very logical. But Jesus, he gets this message, and he gets their message, and then he responds, man, in a couple ways that just kind of leave you scratching your head. First, Jesus says that this sickness will not lead to death, right? He says that in verse 4, but then the 10 verses later, which we haven't read yet, but we're going to read it here. From the mouth of Jesus, we read that Lazarus is dead. And then the second thing that Jesus decides to do is he decides to stay and not go visit them. He waits 4 days. So let's understand this timetable. All right, understand on day one, this messenger comes to Jesus and gives him a note. This is the same day that Lazarus dies. Day two, the messenger returns to Bethany. Day three, Jesus waits another day. Then he decides to part for Bethany. And then day four, Jesus arrives in Bethany. For someone who loves Lazarus and loves Mary and Martha, this is kind of puzzling behavior, right? But Jesus is very clear in verse 4 that there's a reason to this. There's a purpose for this illness, and it's to both glorify him and his Father. Church family, I want you to know that nothing happens by chance. Nothing is without purpose. Whether sickness, sorrow, pain, death. There is nothing that happens in your life that God does not permit for some reason. So there is no situation in your life where God cannot be glorified in it. And it doesn't matter if it's an impossible boss, or if it's a loveless marriage, or a crushing financial bill, or a dysfunctional family. God can be glorified in every situation. So no matter what you go through, my encouragement, I want you to ask the question, how can I glorify God in this? Now, our normal response is what? What's the fastest way out of this situation, right? How can I make this stop? Right? This hurts. This is so uncomfortable. Make it stop. That's our normal response. But what God is revealing to us here, and as he shows us, there's a reason for it all. And it's for his glory, and it's for because of his love for you. Now let's ask this question. Was it unloving for Jesus to wait and to stay an extra 2 days before coming? If you were Mary and Martha and found Jesus waited, would it have felt unloving? Yeah, absolutely. It would have felt like betrayal. But I want you to know this. Your feelings are fallible. Your feelings are prone to error. Your feelings will say to you when your plans fail, see, God doesn't love you. He won't come. Your feelings will tell you that he won't heal. He won't act. That's what our feelings are going to tell us. What we need to do is we need to recall to our minds the character of God. And we need to recall to our minds what God has done in the past. And then we need to remember the promises of God of what he is going to do. We need to let the truth shape our emotions rather than let our emotions shape the truth. Look at verse 8 with me now. It says, but his disciples objected. Rabbi, they said, only a few days ago the people in Judea were trying to stone you. Why are you going there again? Jesus replied, there are 12 hours of daylight every day. During the day, people can walk safely. They can see because they have the light of the world. But at night, there's danger of stumbling because they have no light. Then he said, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but now I will go and wake him up. The disciples said, Lord, if he's sleeping, he will soon get better. They thought Jesus meant Lazarus was simply sleeping, but Jesus meant Lazarus had died. So he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And for your sakes, I'm glad I wasn't there. For now you will really believe. Come, let's go see him. Thomas, nicknamed the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let's go too and die with Jesus. So in verse 8, we finally see that Jesus decides to go visit Lazarus. But his disciples, they're not too keen on this idea, and there's good reason for this, because just a few weeks ago, Jesus was in Bethany, and they wanted to grab stones and kill him because Jesus claimed to be the Son of God. So his disciples ask a very simple and logical question. Why do you want to go back? To which Jesus replies, basically he replies and says this, look, guys, thanks for your concern. I have nothing to worry about. I have nothing to fear. I am the light of the world. And at this point, Jesus tells his disciples that Lazarus had fallen asleep. You ever wonder why Jesus uses the word sleep here for the word death? And I think Jesus did this because I think Jesus was telling his disciples that Lazarus sleeping was really no, that Jesus really had a different perspective when it comes to death than they did. You see, the disciples in the culture back then, they thought that death was like final, that death had all the power, that death was the ultimate winner, that they feared death. This is the reason why they didn't want to go back. They didn't want to die. But to Jesus, death is no worse than sleep. To Jesus, death is powerless. It's no harder for Jesus to wake Lazarus from the dead than it would be waking him from sleeping. Now, the disciples, they didn't really understand this, why Jesus said sleeping. So we see in verse 14 here that Jesus straight up has to tell them, Lazarus is dead. He's dead. And then that this was for good. That this was for good, not because Jesus' friend had died, but now he could reveal yet again his power. And the results would be the glory of God and the strengthening of their faith. Look at verse 17. It says, when Jesus arrived at Bethany, he was told that Lazarus had already been in the grave for 4 days. Bethany was only a few miles down the road from Jerusalem. So many of the people had come to console Martha and Mary in their loss. When Martha got word that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him. But Mary stayed in the house. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus told her, your brother will rise again. Yes, Martha said, he will rise with everyone else when everyone else rises at the last day. Jesus told her, I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live, even after dying. Everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never, ever die. Do you believe this, Martha? Yes, Lord, she told him. I have always believed you. I always believed that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who has come into the world from God. Let's pause here. So by the time that Jesus arrives in Bethany, Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. And we need to understand that this timing is no accident. After 4 days, there is no doubt whatsoever that Lazarus is dead. Okay, it's too long to be a mistake. He is dead. And this also allows, verse 19 tells us, that a crowd of mourners are gathering, and they're going to witness the power of Jesus, and they're going to witness what Jesus is about to do. But before he reaches the house, Martha comes to him and meets him and then expresses her disappointment. She had a plan. She had called Jesus. Jesus could have fixed everything. Jesus could have prevented the death of her brother. But he didn't come in time. It's interesting here that her intense disappointment also reveals her deep confidence in Jesus. She knew without a shadow of a doubt that Jesus could have healed Lazarus. But now, he's 4 days too late. Jesus responds to Martha and tells her, "Your brother will rise again." We see that in verse 23. And Martha, she agrees. You see, Martha, she knows the Old Testament. She understands the promise of God that this life is not all there is. And she knows the grave is not the end. But Jesus, he's talking about something different, isn't he? Jesus is talking about something better, something bigger, something more remarkable. Jesus says, "I am the resurrection and life." Church family, I need you to understand that our hope and our future is not in an event. It is not in a miracle. Our hope and our future is in a person. And that person is Jesus. He is life and he is resurrection. So for us, this means that even though we may die physically, it's not the end. It's not the end. We will live on forever. That those who live spiritually will never have to worry about their spiritual lives ending. If you have said yes to Jesus, then you can live with great hope and a great future. That we believers in Jesus believe, just like Martha, that Jesus is the Son of God. And that he came into this world just as God promised, to rescue us from sin and death and hell. Look at verse 28 now. It says, "When she returned to Mary, she called Mary aside from the mourners and told her, 'The teacher is here and he wants to see you.' So Mary immediately went to him." Jesus had stayed outside the village at the place where Martha met him. When the people who were at the house consoling Mary saw her leave so hastily, they assumed she was going to Lazarus' grave to weep. So they followed her there. When Mary arrived and saw Jesus, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had only been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and saw the other people wailing with her, a deep anger swelled within him, and he was deeply troubled. "Where have you put him?" he asked. They told him, "Lord, come and see." Then Jesus wept. The people who were standing nearby said, "See how much he loved him?" But then some said, "This man healed a blind man. Couldn't he have kept Lazarus from dying?" So after Martha responds to Jesus, she goes and gets Mary, who then comes and almost asks word for word the same thing, right? "Jesus, if you would have been here, my brother would not have died." And this was their plan, right? This is what they talked about. This is probably what they discussed daily, probably hourly. They were sure that Jesus was going to heal Lazarus, but he didn't. And it hurt, and it led to deep sorrow, and it led to tears. And Jesus knows what he's about to do. And this is so profound to me. Before Jesus is going to do what he's going to do, he responds to Mary and Martha with deep compassion. Their tears are met with his tears, showing his humanity, his emotions, his love for them. Jesus willingly enters into their suffering. And this is remarkable to me. Jesus is about to do something that's going to take away their suffering. But before he fixes their problem, he joins in their pain. He enters their grief. If I was Jesus, I don't know if I would have responded like this. I would have said, hey, wipe those tears away. Let's go get your brother right now. That's what I would have said. But I think what Jesus is telling us here and what he's showing us is that we cannot be afraid to enter into someone else's pain. So often I shy away from those uncomfortable moments, right? I try to soothe it over. I quickly run to fix the problem. And I know I need to be more like Jesus here. And out of love for others, I just need to sit and weep with those who weep. How about you? Do you join with others in their pain, in their suffering, in their tears? Or do you rush to fix the problem? Look at verse 38 now. Jesus was still angry as he arrived at the tomb. A cave with a stone rolled across its entrance. "Roll the stone away," Jesus told them. But Martha, the dead man's sister, protested, "Lord, he has been dead for 4 days. The smell will be terrible." Jesus responded. "Didn't I tell you that you would see God's glory if you believe?" And so they rolled the stone aside. Then Jesus looked up from heaven and said, "Father, thank you for hearing me. You always hear me, but I say it out loud for the sake of those people standing here so that they will believe you sent me." Then Jesus shouted, "Lazarus, come out." And the dead man came out, and his hands and feet bound in grave clothes, his face wrapped in a headcloth. And Jesus told them, "Unwrap him and let him go." So only after entering their grief and being present in their tears, Jesus moves to end it. So why did Jesus let all this happen if he knew that he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead? I mean, why did he let those he loved experience 4 days of deep, profound grief and sorrow? Why? And we need to understand, church, that God is going to do things that we can never grasp. Right? He is God, and we're not. And he's got purposes far beyond what we think and far beyond what we can imagine. And we don't know all that Jesus is doing. This miracle was about something bigger than removing their grief and removing their sorrow. This miracle was about the power of Jesus over death, right? And this would have never happened if Jesus would have submitted to Mary and Martha's plan and healed Lazarus when he was sick. So even though we don't understand, and even when our plans fail and our hearts are broken, we should never doubt God's love for us. And we should never doubt his desire for us to experience his glory. And we should never doubt his call for us to trust in him. The end of this story is almost anticlimactic, right? Jesus says like 9 words here. "Lazarus, come out," and "unwrap him and let him go." That's kind of interesting, right? Why are there so few words about the resurrection of Lazarus? And maybe, just maybe, it's because of this. This wasn't a fair fight. This wasn't a fair fight. Up until this point, death had always won. Death would always sweep in, and whoever was in its way lost. Death always got the final word. And even if someone would rally, death would win in the end, right? When death occurs, there is no more hope. It's all over. There's no more chances. It's final. But this time Jesus fought death. And Jesus got the final word. Resurrection was the result. Life. When Jesus tells us, church family, that he is the resurrection, when Jesus tells us that he is the life, he means it. He means it. Look at verse 45. Many of the people who were there with Mary believed in Jesus. And when they saw this happen, but some went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. Then the leading priests and Pharisees called the high council together. What are we going to do? They asked each other. This man certainly performs many miraculous signs. And if we allow him to go on like this, soon everyone will believe in him. Then the Roman army will come and destroy both our temple and our nation. Caiaphas, who was the high priest at the time, said, "You don't know what you're talking about. You don't realize that it's better for you that one man should die for the people than for the whole nation to be destroyed." He did not say this on his own. A high priest at the time, he was led to prophesy that Jesus would die for the entire nation. And not only for the nation, but to bring together and unite all the children of God scattered around the world. So from that time on, the Jewish leaders began to plot Jesus' death. And as a result, Jesus stopped his public ministry among the people and left Jerusalem. He went to a place near the wilderness, a village of Ephraim, and stayed there with his disciples. It was now almost time for the Jewish Passover celebration, and many people from all over the country arrived in Jerusalem several days early so they can go through the purification ceremony before Passover began. And they kept looking for Jesus. But as he stood around the temple, they said to each other, "What do you think? He won't come for Passover, will he?" Meanwhile, the leading priests and Pharisees had publicly ordered that anyone seeing Jesus must report it immediately so that they could arrest him. So because of this radical change in the body of Lazarus, from death to life, many people desired to see Lazarus. Lazarus was this living witness, a living testimony that was used by God to bring about salvation. And even though there's no record of Lazarus speaking in the Gospels, his daily walk, understand, just him being there and doing normal things, it was enough to convince people that Jesus is the Son of God. And with that miracle, with the miracle of Lazarus, people were divided. Some people believed, and on Palm Sunday, just a few days away from this point, they gave great witness to the power of Jesus. And then some people didn't believe in the power of Jesus. And they ran to the Pharisees, they ran to the religious leaders and told them what had happened. You see, Jesus was a huge threat to the Pharisees. He was a huge threat to their control, to their influence. And they were way beyond, they were way past looking for truth at this point. Their only objective as the Pharisees was to protect their own. And their official decision was that Jesus must die. And their plan, here's another plan, they thought they were in control. They thought they had put into motion the death of Jesus. They thought they had come up with this idea. Oh, no, 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 no. No, no. God was in control. God's plan was bigger, and God's plan was greater. The death of Jesus was necessary because he paid the price of our sin, of your sin and my sin, to which the payment, the consequence of our sin is death. And only through Jesus do you and I have access to God and eternal life. That was God's original plan all along. That's why Jesus came to this earth in the first place. Lazarus is a perfect illustration to us about the salvation that only Jesus can bring. Lazarus is dead. He's gone. There's no hope. He can do nothing, right? No one else can do anything. In the exact same sense, sinners are in the same boat. They're dead. They can do nothing about it. They can do nothing to save themselves. Lazarus was only saved by how? the power of Jesus. It was all Jesus. And all who trust and say yes to Jesus, in the exact same way Lazarus was given, we are given new life, and we are lifted out of the graveyard of sin and death. And it's only because of Jesus. It's only because of Jesus. Church family, I know that you have had plans, and you have expectations, and you have had hopes and dreams that have failed. They didn't play out the way that you thought they would. And I know it hurts. And I know you don't understand why. And you want to yell at God. And I get it. I get it. But I hope you see here in John 11 that he's got a plan. And he's got purpose that's far better and greater than anything that we can imagine. And it's for his glory. And it's for his kingdom. Church family, my desire and my encouragement is that you find peace and comfort and even joy knowing that his plans are greater and better than our own. I'm going to invite the praise team to come on up, but I want to give you guys just a minute just to sit and just to respond before we move into our closing song. Let me ask you, what is your heart and what is your attitude toward your broken and failed dreams and plans? Are you still holding on to anger, the frustration? Have you refused to glorify God in your situation? I want you to know that you have a God who will sit with you. And you have a God who will weep with you. A God whose plans are bigger and greater. We have a God who deserves worship because he's secured our eternal future. He is life. He is resurrection. So church family, take a moment. Just sit, talk with your God, and just respond the way the Spirit's leading.